Hello, 103. Here we are, chapter 12. Chapter 12 is on the economics of labor. A lot of people who are not inclined to the economic model really get upset at chapter 12. It's okay to talk about the demand for apples. It's okay to talk about the supply of widgets. But oh my goodness, you can't talk about human beings that way. If you go back to the assumptions we've made in the model, there's nothing about those assumptions that restrict us in what we can apply the supply and demand analysis to, that firms are demanders of workers and individuals supply labor to the workforce. And so there's no reason why we can't use our analysis. But again, depending on your worldview, you might find this sort of thing objectionable. And even when it comes to the analysis of labor markets, you might find it okay to talk about the determination of wages, but you might think that the analysis of discrimination or something is verboten. But again, our model can be used to think about these things. Question number 28 in chapter 12 is a nice little question, because it easily shows an unintended consequence of fiddling around with the labor market. And if the answer here is very counterintuitive to you, you should sort of take a step back and ask yourself, why is it that I would have had the opposite idea of what's going on? So let's work through it and see how it goes. So we've got a labor market. There's a demand curve given by this. It's just an analytical demand curve. Nobody would think that that's an actual demand curve for labor, but it's downward sloping. That's all we really care about for this question. And there's a very simple linear upward sloping supply curve of labor. And W is the wage rate. And it says, using algebra, calculate the equilibrium wage rate and the equilibrium level of employment. So you should by now recognize that this is exactly the same kind of question that we did back in chapter 10. Where you've got two equations, two unknowns, demand curve, supply curve, and we're just trying to find the intersection of where to determine the wage rate and the quantity, the level of employment. So what do? We set our demand, we set the quantity demanded, we set equal to the, the quantity supplied. And what is the quantity demanded? Well, the quantity demanded is given by 10 minus W, and that's just equal to, W. Well, this is going to be really simple. 10 is equal to 2W. W is equal to 5. Okay, so the wage rate is $5. How do we figure out what the employment level is? Well, if the wage equals 5, there's 5 workers employed. Supplied, and if the wage equals 5 here, 10 minus 5 is 5, so we know that the quantity is also 5 as well. So doing that, that was pretty simple. And now let's just see if we can move to the next part of the question. I'm going to need my eraser, I think. Okay, so we're going to erase all this. All right, so that was easy. Now suppose there's a minimum wage of $6 per hour. And in a graph, draw the above demand and supply curves and show the effect of the minimum wage. All right, we can do that. So let's come down here and let's see if we can draw our, do a half decent job at graphing something. Oh boy, that's terrible. Okay, good thing this is an easy question. So here's our quantity of labor. And up here we have the wage rate. And there's a demand curve that's running from 10 down to 10. And there's a supply curve that's just coming out of the origin. It's got a slope of 1. And it looks like that. So there's our supply. There's our demand. We already solved for the equilibrium. And we found out in part A that the wage rate is $5. And the quantity is 5. So now the government's come along, they put on a minimum wage of six. So let's just suppose this is up here, be exaggerated a little bit. So this is the minimum wage. Notice the minimum wage is above the equilibrium wage. It wouldn't make much sense to put on a minimum wage that was below the equilibrium wage. If the government came along and said, oh, you can't pay workers less than $1 an hour, that would be non-binding. They're already paying them five. So here's six. So let's see, what happens to the quantity demanded and supplied? Well, at that high wage rate, what happens is firms are willing to hire fewer workers. And so if we plug six into our demand curve, we find out that they're only willing to hire four. On the other hand, individual workers, seeing that high wage rate, more of them are willing to work now, and there's actually six people that are willing. So there's six people that are willing to work, only four are being employed, and so there's an unemployment, an excess supply, which we call unemployment, and that's equal to two workers. Notice that the level of unemployment is a function of the wage rate. It's not that there's a natural rate of unemployment out there, that how many people are unemployed depends on what the wage is. The number of jobs that are offered depends on what the wage is. You lower the wage, there'll be more people willing to hire you. And so we tend to think of these things as fixed, but they're not fixed. They are determined, they're endogenous. The number of people that are employed, unemployed, etc., depends on the actual wage rate. So at the new level of employment, what's the minimum wage? Okay, so here's where the question starts to get interesting. At the new level of employment, so it's at four, what's the minimum wage these workers would accept and still be willing to work? So here's the interesting thing. So when there's four workers, those workers are receiving $6. But those four workers would have been willing to work for $4. Those four workers are receiving a rent of $2. A rent is an amount that could be taken away from these workers, and they would not change their behavior. If this firm could somehow offer these workers $4 rather than $6, they would still be there. And so $4 is the minimum wage these workers would be willing to accept. Now, suppose the firm decided to reduce the worker benefits by lowering the on-the-job training, asking for shorter breaks, reducing the quality of working conditions. And suppose these reduce the benefits by $1.99 an hour. So let's say just two for the moment. Would these workers tolerate such a thing? Well, if they were getting paid a gross wage of six, but they're having their benefits reduced by $1.99, they were making $4 and a penny, they would still work, right? Why do they still work? Because that's still better than their opportunity cost. If they leave, they get $4. If they stay, they get $4.01. And so they'll stay. If such a reduction took place, show on the graph who actually benefited from the minimum wage. Well, firms now are receiving this rent. So you put on a minimum wage, you reduce the amount of employment, that causes a loss of consumer surplus for firms that would have hired these workers. It causes a loss of consumer surplus of individuals who would have been employed but now are unemployed. And of the workers that work, they actually receive a net lower wage. And so it's the firms that are still in business that get to rip off their workers that actually benefit from the minimum wage law. This is the opposite of when we looked at rent control in the book. You put on a rent control on apartments and people end up paying more for the apartment. You put on a minimum wage that raises wage rates, but the net wage actually falls. All three of my children were lifeguards. And I take that back, two of the three were lifeguards. And lifeguards earn a high union wage rate. They were earning, you know, a decade ago, they were making $25, $26 an hour as a lifeguard. How do you become a lifeguard though? You have to start when you're like 15 years old, volunteer, accept terrible shifts, accept split shifts, accept minimum wages, all kinds of things until you can finally end up earning the $26 an hour. So, you know, the net wage that you receive as a lifeguard is probably nowhere near the full $26 an hour. So there's a nice little example of how our model shows that there's an unintended consequence. Normally we think, oh, workers are receiving too little. How should we help them? Let's just give them more money. But in giving them more money, you end up actually net giving them less money. All right? Now, if you did not understand that, or if that's very counterintuitive to you, ask yourself, why is it so counterintuitive? And the answer is that you're probably not fully understanding the concept of equilibrium and the fact that in equilibrium, all the gains have to be exhausted. That you can't have an equilibrium where somebody is willing to work for $4 but is receiving $6. Competition among the workers is going to drive that wage down to $4. Okay. See you later.